Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. I am your host, 12 Kyle. We want to thank you for tuning in. This is a weekly sports podcast. We like to call it the best couple of hours of your sports week. This is the place where sports opinions collide. Again, I am your host, 12 Kyle. This is Dead End Sports. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe, download to our podcast. You can find it just about anywhere. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, YouTube. We have our own YouTube channel, youtube.com/deadendsports. Again, and also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Dead End Sports. Packed show for you this week. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. Of course, I will not be doing this show alone. Bringing along with me all the homies. First up, my homie BZ430. BZ, what up, though?
What up, though? Damn right you ain't doing this show alone.
What's up, man? What's going on?
What's up? Chilling, man. Chilling up here. Being a victim of the first time being mean to death on the internet, man. The internet got me.
Oh, snap, for real?
And then Ken wrong as hell for posting on the Dead End Instagram.
Let me guess. The screenshot of the frozen picture on the from the Kendrick review?
Yeah, man. And like on Twitter, man, they let me have it. I gotta
check it.
You know, of course, because when we all together, you know, we just naturally just raw emotion, you know, being silly, doing stuff. So like, yeah, once I watched the video, I was like, oh, man. And then, like, literally about 2 minutes later, then the memes just started coming all on Twitter, man. That's like, funny. I was like, man, they got me. I said, damn. So, yeah. And then I looked on Instagram. I'm like, ooh, man, you old sneaky something, boy.
Also join us, the homie Ken. What up, man?
Nothing, man. You know, being mischievous as usual.
Oh yeah, the internet's got undefeated. Him. It's undefeated.
Yeah, I got on that one.
ladies and gentlemen, also our homie FIFO will be on the way momentarily. If you haven't done so, make sure, especially if you're a hip hop fan, man, slide on up when you finish listening to this podcast. Slide on over to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/deadendhiphop, and check out the latest review. The fellas got the review for Kendrick Lamar's "Damn." And it's pretty damn good, if I do say so myself. We're talking sports tonight, man. So pass the word. Tell a friend. Dead End Sports is back again. Let's start, man, with the NBA. Man, we got some crazy news coming out of Golden State. Golden State's head coach, Steve Kerr, has been battling. We know for the past year or so, he's been battling issues stemming from back surgery. Well, it sidelined him for game 3 and game 4 that the Warriors missed. Steve Kerr did speak to the media this past Sunday, and he had a few words to say. And, you know, he tried to sound encouraging, but, you know, there's a little hint that they're not sure if and when he will be back. So, B, I'll throw it to you, man. How do you think the Warriors will fare if they have to be without Steve Kerr for the remainder of the playoffs?
I think they would be okay. I mean, I think they'd be just fine. I think Steve Kerr created a culture there where the players believe in, the assistant coaches believe in, and I think with the talent they have, I think they're gonna be just fine, man. I don't think it's gonna steer them away that much. I don't think it's not a situation, you know, like, you know, Isaiah Thomas losing his sister, where we saw in games 1 and 2 where like Boston just did not seem right as a team. Mm-hmm. I don't think this would be the same situation with Golden State. If anything, I think this would kind of be a little bit of a motivation for them to kind of, I guess, play better, or like, hey, let's do this for coach. Let's go ahead and win a championship for coach. I can kind of see that being more of a motivation for the Golden State also than just them just being all, man, we don't have our coach, we down, what are we gonna do, we lost. Like, with that talent level, I think those guys would be just fine. I don't see it slowing these guys down one bit. They seem like they're getting their groove at the right time of the year. Even You know, even games when Kevin Durant's not playing and they still playing like they're in the groove. Now, granted, it's the Trailblazers. They're the AFC. We knew that they were definitely the superior team over them. So, but I think, you know, as the playoffs get down into the nitty gritty, I think Golden State will be okay, man. I think them coaches, they know, you know, how to implement the system. They know what to say to get them players motivated and everything. It's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day, like, wow, if Curry don't come back, and we get the trilogy NBA final that we all pretty much expected since November. Mm-hmm. Be interesting to Mike Brown going against LeBron. You know what I'm saying? I think that would be like really, that would be very interesting, man. So, but yeah, I think with Kirby down, I don't think it's the end all be all for Golden State. I think they'd be just fine. I mean, at the end of the day, those guys know how to play basketball. So, you know, they'd be okay.
What about you, Ken? Like B said, man, I mean, Steve Kerr is looking at the possibility. I mean, we don't have a definitive time frame for when he will be back. He could be back game one of their next series, or he, you know, it could be something that lingers on. I mean, back issues, especially for a man, I'm assuming Steve Kerr is probably around 50, you know, is an issue. So what do you think? How do you think the Warriors could be and how they would fare without, assuming that they had to play the rest of the playoffs without their fearless leader?
Well, one, I'm with whoever told him not to get back surgery. I had an aunt who had back surgery, and it messed her up, man. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'm not in that position where I have to make that decision. But it's painful to hear that Kerr is going through this, and it sounds like it's something that won't be alleviated anytime soon. And for me, I think he might be done coaching, period. If he can't come back for the rest of this playoff run. And I'm kind of with B. I think it could definitely motivate that team to do this for Kerr. And from there, they can rally behind him. I think that's part of what, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but I think that's what we saw last night. You know, at the time of this recording, the Blazers and the Warriors played last night. And the Blazers were blown out. So I think a lot of that had to do with Kerr. And we'll see, man. I do worry about Mike Brown. Much like B, it will be interesting to see how he fares versus LeBron James, because you know LeBron James is going to want to win that series, so he'll have some extra motivation. But in all honesty, if he plays the Spurs, how are you going to get through that? Because there are coaching decisions that have to be made. And we've seen the impact of some of those decisions in the playoffs so far. Let's give Mike Brown his credit. He took that team to the finals that had literally one player. And we saw what happened in the finals. They got swept. But he was good enough to get them there with LeBron. Now, not only does he have KD, but he has Curry, he has Klay Thompson, he has Draymond Green. Like, you can't mess this up. So, overall, I think they'll be fine. I think this could be a rallying cry for the Warriors, but I just hope that Kerr makes the decision, I'm sure he will, that's best for him. And really, man, I just hope he gets well.
Yeah, same here, man. I listen to it, and I try not to make more than what I, you know, make more of something than what I hear. He obviously sounded, you know, down and downtrodden, if you will. But he didn't necessarily, I mean, as I listen to him, I'm like, yo, this could really be it for him. Like, I mean, and people don't understand. Yeah. And you would think, okay, well, he's just a coach. You know, what is he? It's not like he's out there running on the floor or anything like that. But there's a lot of travel involved. There's a lot of, you know, and you know, I'm pretty sure the rigors of travel in the NBA, while they're not, you know, they're not on crop dusters or anything like that. But the rigors and the grind of an NBA, an 82-game NBA schedule, as well as the playoffs, can take its toll on your back. And I'm not someone who's had any back issues, but you know, from what I understand from people who have had back issues, that ain't nothing to play with. So, you know, Steve Kerr could be looking at a situation where he may, you know, really be contemplating you know, not coming back at all. That being said, how will this team fare without him? I think they will be fine. I'm not as big a fan of Mike Brown. I never have been. But I think that there's a system in place. And I think the thing that's key, other than a guy like Durant, most of the cats on this team have played without Kerr being there. You know, he went through a stint last year where he was out with back issues and after the back surgery, and Luke Walton stepped in. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Luke Walton went like 39-4. So I think that the team will be fine. I do, you know, wonder what happens when you get to, you know, a little bit more tougher series and it comes down to coaching. Can you call the right plays? Can you put the people in place? But they have, Golden State seems to have a system, you know, and like, you know, you mentioned Pop in San Antonio. Pop has a system. So, I mean, like, if Pop were out for any extended period of time, I don't know who even know who his top assistant is, but I'm pretty sure that they could run it just the way that Pop runs it, you know, in the way that he does it. So I think they'll be fine. I think it'll be interesting come, you know, as the series gets harder, assuming that they run into San Antonio in the Western Conference Finals. And if they get past them, seeing Cleveland in the finals, I think, you know, then, you know, all eyes would be on Mike Brown. And that's provided if Steve Kerr does not come back. But I think the Warriors as a team, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be just fine. As you mentioned at the top, Ken, we do have we want to give you guys some updates since the last time that we got together to do our podcast. You know, these series have been going on, man, and it's been pretty compelling basketball. Over in the Eastern Conference, we got the Atlanta Hawks and the and the Washington Wizards. A series where the Wizards were up 2-0, and then they came to Atlanta and dropped two. So now it's 2-2 headed back to D.C. at the time of this recording. Game five will be tomorrow. Your take on where that series is and what's going on there?
You know, I think it's a great case of, you know, home teams protecting their home court. I love the back and forth between Morris and Millsap. You know, one called him a crybaby, and the other one say, you know, yeah, take your loss and come back to the next game. I mean, stuff. I love that, man. Let intensify these playoffs, man. Like let's get some bad blood going, man. I want some. Not saying I want a palace brawl, like the palace, but you know, let's get some competition. Let's get the blood going, man. You know, that's what I want, man. I want to see that in these playoffs, man. So I like it that these two teams are starting to have like a hate for each other in this series. You know what I'm saying? Not saying that they're gonna have this is gonna be the Lakers versus Celtics rival, but you know, I love that they have that hate in this against each other in this series. And you know, I think it's great when both teams protect home court. You know, it's amazing. You know, we've been watching these playoffs for decades, man. It's like, it's amazing how like a game or two can shift an entire series, or almost shift in a series. Cause you know, Wizards going up 2-0. We like, oh yeah, they're going to handle, you know, Hawks. Hawks might only get one game. Mm-hmm. Here you go, right now, the both home games. The Hawks, they took care of business and played well. So now it's like, you know, they kind of got the momentum. So you know, it's like, okay, can Wizards hold up and win this series? So you know, I like stuff like this, man. I love when, you know, we think we have it figured out in the series. A game right. or two later, we like, wait a minute. So maybe this team is the real deal. So, you know, and I just love the I love the competitive blood that they have going on right now, man. I love it. So great way for teams to both protect their home courts. I hope this series goes seven games. Damn it. I want some suspense in this first round.
Yes, sir. What about you, Ken? Your take on Hawks Wizards?
Man, I love how John Wall is playing, man.
Yes. Like,
he really wants it. And he's playing with the type of attitude like he's the best player in the league. Like, he's the best point guard in the league. I mean, he's hitting big shots. He's aggressive. He's timely. He gets all of his teammates involved. Like, he's going after it. And he's trying to put it to the Hawks. Like, he's not... This isn't for play. John Wall is serious. You know, I call this the Death Row DC versus Magic City series. I can't say that I really, really believe they are motivated by what the Wizards were saying, by the attitude of the Wizards, by Gortat dunking on Millsap, and they're responding. So for me, man, all the Wizards have to do is simple: win your home game.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I really am surprised. I thought that my Hawks were just gonna come and lay down and get smoked and get swept. They showed a little bit of fight. Now I would like to see more fight when they go. Now I did pick the Hawks to lose the series, and I ultimately think that they're going to lose this series. But I like the way that they've been competing. Dwight Howard actually showed up, and going into yesterday's game, the great JaVale McGee was averaging more points than Dwight Howard. So that's mind boggling to me, but that's another story for another day. But yeah, this series, man, I think has been good. Much like B, I like the war words. I like the bad blood, and I'm loving John Wall, man. John Wall has really this season. And I mean, I think I've always known how dope John Wall is, but this season really has opened my eyes as to how great he is as a player. And I mean, I don't know what it is that he has against Dennis Schroeder, but he's taking the Dennis Schroeder every single chance he gets. I mean, it is clearly personal. He dunked on him and was like, what the F you want to do? What you going to do? Like that type of stuff. So I love it. And the coast to coast, behind the back, then throwing it down on Kent Bazemore was just downright nasty. And I mean, John Wall is so fast with the basketball, man. I mean, like I used to think Iverson was probably one of the fastest people that I've ever seen with a basketball. John Wall is right up there. But I'm liking this series, man. This series looks like it could go seven. Also in the East, we've got Boston and Chicago, the number one seed against the number eight seed. Now, Boston got off to a slow start, dropped two games at home, then went to Chicago, and it seemed like the light switch came on, and they are now playing like a number one seed. Ken, what are you liking in the series, man? It's 2-2, and it's headed back to Beantown.
You know what? Boston is extremely lucky. That's what I'm taking from this series, because we all know this series turned when Rondo broke his finger. And that was it. He was dominating them. He had control of the game. He played with the championship fervor that we know him to have. And then all of a sudden he breaks his finger. I think that somebody from Boston sent somebody out there to break his finger or something. Somebody, some mobster sent somebody after Rondo because it came out of nowhere. You know, if you guys remember what I said last week, I said Chicago is very inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And they are proving it. You lose two at home. Even without Rondo, Jerry and Grant, who I thought could step into the the limelight and play, just can't do anything. Fred Hoiberg is making terrible roster decisions. He's just desperate right now. And I understand. They were supposed to win this series. If Rondo stayed healthy, they were going to win this series. And now, at this point, Boston has control of it.
Yep, I completely agree, man. Rondo getting injured was the best thing to happen for Boston. It's like, what else can you say about that? Yeah, when Rondo got hurt, I was like, boy, Boston caught them a good break, because they were looking like they were almost about to get swept, if not five games. But now I think, the shift has definitely changed to Boston. I think Boston is going to take this series in six. Because, yeah, like Ken said, Coach is just – he's scrambling at this point. He's trying to find whatever lineup that can work.
What? He really is.
No matter what – no matter what players he put in there, he just trying to find guys that work. And, it was funny. Michael Carter-Williams got mad because Isaiah Thomas yelling at him, like, he can't guard me. Then he going to catch feelings. Like, dude, don't catch feelings. Lock up the defense. Like get on defense and try to stop him. Don't get mad.
Rondo's injury definitely changed the series. This one, and I saw right before we started recording this podcast, is that he's trying to get back for game five. I don't know how you play with a broken thumb. The fact that he's trying
He'll
to get
be
back,
better than
I think,
Jerry and Grant and Michael Carter Williams.
Yo, Ken, you know what's funny, man? Like B said, Hoiberg was putting guys out there I never even heard of, man.
He was just, man, he was, boy, he was.
I think he was pulling cats off the street. oh man, it was like they were pulling, they were putting guys in the game, and I'm like, man, who is that? Like, these are people that even casual NBA fans never heard of. I mean, like, I think they said like maybe 6 or 7 minutes into the game, he had already played like 10 players. So, and Ken, your boy D Wade ain't helping either. He ain't helping at all.
D Wade, man. All right.
Go ahead and defend him.
I'm not. I was going to say that Hoiberg would be better having Dwayne Wade play point at this point.
Yeah, but if you do that, then who do you put in at the two? They're just not. They don't have enough depth.
They can play Zipser. Zipser, the white boy.
Man, I never heard of that dude. I was like, who is that?
He started for Wade when Wade was hurt, when Wade broke his arm. He was actually one of the stars. And he has Denzel Valentine. Valentine played well at times during the regular season. So he could start Wade at the point and Valentine or Zipser at the two, and then just bring one or the other, whoever he, you know, off the bench.
Also in the Eastern Conference, we got the series between the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Raptors put down a smackdown last night against the Bucks. So the Raptors now lead the series 3-2. The series is headed back to Milwaukee, and Toronto will be looking to close out. B, what's your take on this series?
The Rockets OKC?
No. I'm sorry. Raptors. Did I say Rockets?
No, that's probably my fault. You Raptors. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Before this series started, I was thinking Milwaukee in six. People said five, which I thought that was a little extreme. But yeah, I was saying Milwaukee in six. Well, now it looks like if Milwaukee was to take this series, it would have to go seven. But maybe Toronto. You know, sometimes when you in the playoffs and, you know, you're supposed to be one of the elite Eastern Conference teams and you kind of not looking good going into the playoffs, sometimes it takes you like a little self-check, you know, mm-hmm. like self-check situations in the playoffs where a team is kind of supposed to be scary and they kind of putting your back against the wall. Mm-hmm. This might have woke Toronto up just a little bit and kind of get them playing better. They're going to face Cleveland in the next round, you know, the winner of this series play Cleveland next round. They had Cleveland take them out, but you know, maybe a series like this can probably be a good eye opener. And I'm just talking from a player's perspective. If you know, if you Toronto and he's like, okay, yeah, we know we're better than this, but we're not playing like we're supposed to be better than this. And maybe a team like Milwaukee kind of so-called woke up. I ain't going to say the sleeping giant because they're not the Giants of the East, but like, you know, woke up a sleeping monster, I guess, if you want to call. Okay. So, you know, maybe that could be the situation. I think Toronto probably might go ahead and just finish these boys off next, you know, the next game in game six, probably. You know, if they're really serious and if they really want to still consider themselves as one of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. So, but yeah, I mean, I think when this series started, I was saying to myself, like, for those casual basketball fans, this is the Grief Freaks coming out party. Like, mm-hmm. if you don't know about them now, you definitely know about them through this series, you know, knowing how talented and how skilled that this dude, and his ceiling is so freaking high. He's only 22 years old, so he still has plenty of room to improve. And remember, I think a couple weeks ago when you asked me who can I see getting a triple, average triple double, and this was the guy, mm-hmm. because he's so young. And he still has not even sniffed the ceiling yet, man. The ceiling is the roof. The ceiling is the roof with the Greek Freak. And he still hasn't got to that roof yet. And he's 22 years old. So, but I mean, you never know. Toronto might finish these boys out and be ready for Cleveland. So they won't let Cleveland rest that much. But hey, Greek Freak, ceiling is the roof.
Ken, what about you, man? What do you think about this series?
Oh, that's good. Congratulations, Raptors, on the comeback to take the series lead. I still don't trust you. So, again, you're just going to have to go ahead and win this and prove me wrong, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being wrong. I think what we're seeing is just we're seeing a very young team in the Bucks, and they got cocky. You know, they blew out the Raptors and probably thought this was going to be a cakewalk. And they don't understand that teams that are down are desperate and they have to win and they're going to play harder that game to tie it or sometimes even take the lead. But if you're up on a team in the playoffs, they're coming out with every single thing that they have. And you have to be able to match that intensity, because if you don't, you know, this is what happens. And also, I think Jason Kidd hasn't matched the lineup change by Casey. When Casey started Powell and inserted Powell and Norman Powell into the starting lineup, I don't think he's adjusted to that yet. So if he can find a way to negate that, they could probably get back to their winning ways.
I can't really put my finger on what it is I'm going to see on a game-to-game basis, man, because much like you can't, I don't trust Toronto. I just don't, man. I mean, they have their shooting woes. This Bucks team is freakishly athletic. I would really like to see them going up against the Cavs. But I, you know, they had a stinker last night, and I can't put my finger. I'm intrigued to watch this series, but I can't put my finger on, you know, which way it's going to go. I think the Raptors ultimately, because they have home court advantage, will win. But I could definitely see this going seven. I could definitely see it going seven. Then we move over to the Western Conference. We talked about Golden State. They got the Trail Blazers up out of the paint 4-0, swept them. So let's move on to the other series. San Antonio Spurs, the number two seed, going against the Memphis Grizzlies. That series is tied 2-2. And if I'm not mistaken, it is headed back to San Antonio for game five. B, what do you think Pop has in store for those guys? How do you think this one shapes up?
You know, I love the grit and grind that Memphis is showing. You know, I forgot the coach name for Memphis. What's his name?
David Fizdale.
Take that for data.
I love the fact that he, you know, made the adjustment and put Zach Randolph back in the starting lineup. Because you know, I love Zach Randolph, man. He's so throwback and so old school, man. I'm glad he put him in the starting lineup along with Marc Gasol, because we know these guys have chemistry for years and years and years. So I thought that was interesting. Mike Conley put on a show. Him and Kawhi Leonard put on a freaking show in game four, man. Like that was so dope to see, man. Especially from Kawhi Leonard, seeing how his game offensively has evolved over the last 3 years. You know, just 3 years alone, Kawhi Leonard's game has evolved so much. Him training with Kobe in the offseason, man, you definitely see the signs. Definitely. Especially in that game four. But, yeah, I'm loving it, man. I was hoping that series was going to be a drag-out, haymaker type of style series. So I hope that's another one I hope that goes seven, you know, because I like that coach, man. I like that Memphis coach, man. I love the fire he has. I love how the players – kind of rallied up behind him after his take that for data rant, you know, about with the referees and everything. I mean, and he had the numbers to back it up when he was making his argument, which was, it was dope. So, yeah, man, I love it. I like the series, man. I know a lot of people is like, you know, casual basketball fans, oh, it's boring, it's Memphis and San Am, but no, this is a great chess match, man. This is definitely a great chess match to watch, and I just hope it goes seven.
Kawhi, Kobe Leonard, man. man, that's that performance in game four was special, man. And I enjoyed every minute of it. That brother Cole. I want this to go seven as well, because both teams are playing hard. And yeah, I mean, I disrespected the Grizzlies. I'm sorry, guys. I apologize. it just wasn't looking good for you guys, but you guys have definitely shown a lot of heart. And as long as Conley is playing like that, then yeah, let's go seven. Let's do it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game the other night, man. We were texting each other during the game. That was phenomenal, man. And I was surprised to even see a fist pump from Kawhi Leonard, because you know Kawhi Leonard is very emotionless out there on the floor. He actually had a fist pump and said, "Let's go." And I'm like, Kawhi Leonard talks. but yeah, it was good, man. I watching his game grow has been one of the best things I think we've seen over the last few years in the NBA. And Pop, you know, he was steadfast in keeping his lineup. You know, he was getting everything he could out of Tony Parker. But, you know, Kawhi Leonard carried that team. And I think this series definitely has the capability of going seven. Memphis, man, they play hard. And like B said, this is, you know, Zach Randolph is kind of a throwback player. The Grizzlies is kind of like a throwback team. This is kind of like a throwback series, man. You're not going to get the high flying spectacular dunks like LeBron, or you're going to have the reigning threes like, you know, from Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. But this is just a grinded, just, you know, get buckets. You're going to get fouled, get to the line. You got to make your free throws type of series. And I love it, man. And it's back and forth. It ain't a lot of blowouts either. You know, it's relatively close. So I think I'm looking forward to watching these games as well. The other series in the West, the L.A. Clippers against the Utah Jazz. That's a 4-5 series. A couple of injury updates. Blake Griffin, and we'll talk about him a little later, is out for the remainder of the playoffs with a blown toe. And Rudy Gobert, who we thought was going to be out for the remainder of the playoffs, came back for game four. I think he suffered an injury very similar to what Kevin Durant suffered, but he didn't miss as many games. Just a couple of games, and he's back in the lineup last night. This series is tied 2-2. Joe Johnson, 17-year veteran, seems to have found the fountain of youth. Ken, how do you see this series shaping out?
I still got the Jazz, and Chris Paul would just have to be great, man. Like, but just greater than he already is, because he's all they got. And I don't know if it's going to be enough with Blake Griffin hurt. So I still got the Jazz winning this one.
Yeah, I hate to go against my boy CP3, man, but yeah. Blake Griffin being made out of styrofoam is just, you know, I feel bad for him, man. It's like because Clippers always been, you know, pretty, you know, fairly elite in the West for the last, you know, well, since Chris Paul got there. But every time when playoffs come, someone just folds. I think last year both Blake and CP3 got hurt, you know, where, you know, they was poised to kind of challenge Golden State for the spot in the West. You know, it's just like, man, they can't catch a break. And I said this when that injury happened, because we all know Blake's time, I think Clippers is probably going to be up. I was saying CP3 should take his talents to San Antonio after this season. He's a free agent, might as well. I don't know what they can do to make that happen as far as salary cap money wise, but that's where I think CP3 should go. That's just my opinion. But I think Utah's gonna finish it out. It seems like they got their big fella back. They only kind of plan on restricted minutes, but it's always good to have a great rim protector like him and someone that can rebound the ball very well. So, and like you said, Kyle, Joe Johnson out there looking like the Phoenix Suns earlier Atlanta Hawks days. Yep. You know, Joe Johnson. So, hey man, more power to him, Gordon. And it's crazy because Gordon Hayward, I think he got injured, so he had
food poisoning last night.
Yeah, they didn't have him.
He only played 9 minutes.
Yeah, they didn't have him, and Clippers still managed to lose that game, man. Like, you pretty much lose your best player, or if not your second best player on the team, and y'all still lost. Y'all was supposed to take that game if Gordon Hayward wasn't playing. So, yeah, I think in this case, I think Clippers is kind of – they getting ready to check in, and I'm expecting you to make a quick going fishing photo.
Got it ready. Yeah, man, I think this series, this was another one that's kind of hard to. I think CP3 will muster up enough to get them over the hump. I don't know how he's going to do it. I think he's probably going to have some help from the bench. Guys like Mo Space and Jamal Crawford are going to have to step up. But I think I still like the Clippers in this series. I could definitely see this one going seven. Ski Mask Joe Johnson, man, is balling. I mean, so I really don't have nothing bad to say about it. This has been a really good series to watch. Houston is up 3-1. They're playing game five in Houston, looking to close it out. And OKC is trying to stave off elimination. B, can they do it? Can they push this thing at least to game six, possibly game seven?
I don't know, man. I'm waiting for OKC to just, like, let it go in the fourth quarter, man. They didn't.
But Russ is hot tonight. Russ is hot tonight.
He's
hot tonight. And Ken's watching. He's hot tonight.
Me too. I'm watching it too. But they didn't give away so many leads and stuff, and players just, you know, I feel bad for Westbrook, just how, you know, the supporting cast is like, he can't rest. It's like, as soon as he rests, you know, teams losing leads and all that stuff, and then, you know, shows you Harden, he has the luxury to rest because, you know, once he's resting, you still got Lou Williams and Eric Gordon out there that can
still get buckets. Scores, right.
While James Harden is resting, where Russell Westbrook doesn't have that luxury, man. Victor Oladipo.
Oladipo.
You know, he's not the Scottie Pippen to Russell Westbrook. You know, he's not, he can't hold up that scoring in, you know, for Russell when Russell is resting, man. So, you know, they up right now, but I'm expecting the worst as always. What they've been doing, you know, in the fourth quarters is just like letting leads go. In one game, we saw Russell Westbrook taking crazy ill-advised shots, you know, not smart shots, which I get it. His team they lost the lead. He came in, he was trying to, you know, get him that lead and win the game. Where if I was telling Ken, he was that particular game, it was a double-edged sword. If Russell Westbrook would have went 1-for-3, we'd have been like, oh man, he got scared. He didn't show no killer instinct. But you know, the fact that he went 4-for-18, you know, at least he was trying. I mean, yeah, he was taking some dumb shots, ill-advised shots, but at least he was out there trying to get his team back in the game and try to win. So, you know, I just don't think it's just enough, man. It's unfortunate. I think, you know, Russell Westbrook had to take this beating. And they might lose this game, man. I'm expecting to lose this lead. look, another turnover. I'm expecting them to, lose this up in the fourth quarter, man, against the Rockets. I think you should get the OKC pitcher ready for tonight, man.
No doubt. You know, it's already queued up. Westbrook just didn't have enough help. And he's working hard and he's doing what he's got to do. He just doesn't have enough help. I think if Houston does not close them out tonight, I think Houston closes them out in six. I'd love to see it go seven. I don't think it's going to be that long. But it's been a very good series to watch, if for no other reason, just seeing two guys who are battling, you know, who were two of the probably final MVP candidates battling it out.
I think, and this fourth quarter will tell me a lot, but I'm with B. We know they don't have help, but I think they have enough if Russ just trusts him a little bit more in the fourth quarter. He averages one assist in the fourth quarter, and I think all he really needs, I think 10 and maybe 4 or 5, look, now he's just jacking up shots. 10 points, maybe 4 or 5 assists in the fourth quarter with the lead could be enough. But, you know, he's in a situation now, you know, as we watch this game, while we're doing this show, he's red hot. He's just taking 2 threes that basically hit the front of the rim. And these are moments where I think he would be best served running the offense. You know, you got it going. Save some of the energy. You know, get other guys involved because you're going to need them. And, you know, it pains me to see this happen to this man because he's playing so hard. And he's had, double-digit leads in all of the last, 3 or 4 games?
Yeah.
He could actually be up 3-1 right now. He
could very well be. And they said that the plus-minus ratio when he's on the floor – they're at a +3. When he's off the floor, it's a -40. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
The one series we did not talk about is actually over. the Cleveland Cavaliers got the Indiana Pacers up out of the paint. During that series, man, LeBron James, Game 3 went berserk. I'm talking the Cleveland Cavaliers were down by 26 points in the fourth. In the second half, LeBron puts on his cape, rallies the team. Keep in mind that in the fourth quarter, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love sat on the bench and watched. Just like the rest of us, much like LeBron's first stint in Cleveland, we were all witnessing greatness. B, man, that performance that he put up, man, where do you rank? And LeBron has had some signature playoff moments. Where do you rank that amongst his play? And you can give it a number or say like top 5, top 10 or whatever. Where do you rank that as far as his playoff performances?
I guess top five. I mean, I you know, maybe right at that five or four, because I would still put the performance where he lit my Pistons up for 25 straight
yes,
points in
yes,
the fourth quarter
yes.
in overtime back that. In 07, and that game six against Boston where he kind of it was, because that was like his legacy on the line mm-hmm. type of game right mm-hmm. there. When he was with Miami and they kept losing to the big three in Boston, and he finally got over that hump and beat Boston in that game six. I think that was defined. Even, you know, people probably not gonna mention this, but even this game seven against the Spurs, you know, when they won it, you know, when they won the championship, and how Greg Pop dared LeBron to shoot J's, and mm-hmm. LeBron was knocking down mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper, like proving everyone wrong who told him that he couldn't shoot. And LeBron James was shooting those mid-range jumpers, knocking them down, and he beat Greg Pop off of that in game seven. So I would say that.
What about the shootout he had with Paul Pierce as a Cavalier? And didn't he have one against Joe Johnson? And he beat Joe.
I don't remember one against Joe Johnson, but I do remember
the Hawks.
Hey, you know what you're forgetting about? What about what was that game? Was it game six? Either game six or game five last year against in the finals, where he goes for like
37. Game six. Game six, he went for like 41.
Right.
Damn near a triple-double. Like, damn near a triple-double, yeah.
I mean, like, he could not. He had this look on his face. He could not miss.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, you know, probably top five. I mean, you know, like, you know, that's off think of, you know, off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But he probably has some. But I definitely, the Pistons one, oh, that definitely was. That one was crazy.
I think that for me, I think that might have been, well, it's hard to say it's a coming out party, but. That was like my first memory of seeing LeBron be when he's like that, I call him Video Game James, because he's literally like a video game. Like and that's what we saw in game three. Like, he was not going to let that team lose. And I found it interesting that, you know, Love and Irving were on the bench. So it kind of, and I don't know if you guys saw this too, but it kind of felt like, remember how it was when LeBron you know, had to carry those bums the first time he was in Cleveland. It kind of felt like that. Like, it was just LeBron, and it might have been one other starter on the floor, but it was, you know, like, it was the second unit. But it was more so about what LeBron was doing. He was knocking down threes. He was playmaking. He was playing defense. You know, he didn't shut Paul George down, but, you know, Indiana had this look in their eyes like, uh-oh, here they come. You know, like the 26-point lead wasn't safe at all, man. So I think this is definitely, in my opinion, I think this is one of his top five playoff performances. I mean, he just went, the stakes weren't as high as the finals, but, you know, he went Video Game James, man. Like you said, that Celtics series where that was one of his career-defining playoff moments. But I would put this in the top five. I would definitely put this in, but LeBron's got so many freaking memories. It's hard to kind of quantify him. Ken, where do you rank this at, man?
I knew I wasn't crazy. It was game three at Atlanta in 2009, the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Oh, okay. And, I don't remember that, Ken.
He had 40s. He won, I think they won 90. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. 97-82 over the Hawks. He hit 5 of 10 3-point shots. He had 47, 12, and 8.
Well, you know what? As a Hawks fan, I probably remember it, but I just forgot it. I don't remember that shit.
You know what else we forgetting too?
What's that?
He had some pretty epic games against Washington back when Agent Zero, when Gilbert Arenas
was playing. Yeah, they had some battles too.
When it was Caron Butler and all them against, and I remember when LeBron James whispered in Gilbert Arenas' ear, like, you missed this one, it's over. And LeBron, they came back down and they won the game. Yeah, man, I completely forgot about them duels he had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's had his fair share of battles.
Yeah.
Ken, would you put this in his top 10, top 5? Where you think this session of Video Game James would rank?
I'm looking at it now, man, and I don't know, man. I think it's right on the edge of top 10 because, you know, we've forgotten how many great games he's had.
Had so many.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this, I think, while James did the work, I think a lot of what happened had to do with Tyronn Lue and not LeBron James, meaning that it was smart for him to basically put LeBron at the top and surround him with shooters. Mm-hmm. And at that point, what are you going to do? Because you can either guard LeBron one-on-one and let him get to the rim and score at will, or you leave the shooters and he'll pick you apart. You know, hey, I think it's right on the edge of his top 10 best playoff performances.
Hey, real quick, just want to say FIFO's in Cancun right now for his birthday. Birthday tomorrow. I completely forgot that he was leaving for Cancun today, going there for a few days, and him and scope out this spot for the destination wedding next year. So he's there celebrating birthday and all that good stuff. So
happy birthday, FIFO.
Yeah. And just like that, the Rockets have jumped back up on the didn't
I tell you?
Just that fast.
And Russ was on the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Didn't I tell you? I said they're gonna lose his lead. They're gonna lose his lead. Look at it, trapping. They're gonna lose his lead, man. I told you.
Yeah, and Billy Donovan, man. I told y'all last year that Billy Donovan, and everybody jumped on me saying it's his first year, you gotta give him time. No, I saw the flaws. And now this is a flawed roster. Last year you had KD. And you jacked it up. Now you can't even get past this. You had double digit leads in the last three games, and you can't tell Russell to calm his ass down.
It's bad. I mean, you see the stats. They have not been able to maintain leads when Russell Westbrook has been off the court. Last thing on LeBron, I think, like you said, I think he saw it in his eyes, man, and I think. I mean, he saw a team wilting just like, you know, the Falcons did in the Super Bowl. I mean, it was just I got a text, and you guys know my dad. My dad texted me. His text said Westbrook and Harden were, you know, could battle for the MVP. He said, but make no mistake about it, the best player on the planet is LeBron James. And all I could say was, yeah, Dad, you're right. Kind of interesting things that I found about this playoff series, or these playoffs in particular, is that, you know, little beefs have kind of sparked, not necessarily on the floor, but in the post-game press conference. Case in point, Barry Trammell, a reporter from the Oklahoman, had a question, and I'm pretty sure you all have seen it. Steven Adams from OKC, as well as Russell Westbrook, were at the dais. They were taking questions, and he decided to ask Steven Adams about the fact that they could not hold a lead while Russell Westbrook was off the court. And Russell Westbrook, before Adams could even make an attempt to answer the question, Russell Westbrook said, "Hold on, Steven, let me say something." And so Russell Westbrook said, basically, hey, man, don't try to split us up. It's not about what they do when I'm not on the court. It's not about me against them. It's not about me against Houston. We're a team. We win as a team. We lose as a team, so forth and so on. So the reporter, and who am I assuming, because he covers the Oklahoma City Thunder, I'm assuming based on the contention that was going back and forth that these two have probably had words or what have you before. So, you know, he said, I asked the question. I'm trying to be fair. You know, I want him to answer the question. And Russell Westbrook was like, man, next question. And so Barry Trammell, you got to hear the audio. And then it sounds like they're trying to take the microphone away from him. And he's like, no, I have a question. If Steven doesn't want to ask my question, you know, and Steven Adams the whole time is just stone faced looking at the audience like, hey, man, Russell talking, man. Russell saying, I ain't got to answer this. I ain't going to answer it. So ultimately he says next question and they move on. What do you think about that exchange, man? The back and forth. I saw a lot of people on social media and a lot of media members criticizing Russell Westbrook for going at that reporter, but was he wrong?
He wasn't wrong in what he said. You know, he was just really trying to keep the team together, and a question like that, while fair, because it's true,
mm-hmm.
Is very divisive. And,
it is.
You know, it's basically saying that, hey, you guys ain't good enough when he's off the court. You know, what y'all gonna do about that? Why y'all can't hold the lead? What's up with that? But yeah, I do think that Russ should have allowed Steven to answer the question. Because it was a fair question to be asked. So I understand the criticism that he's receiving, because he really was just saying, basically, hold on, you're not going to split us up, and Steven can answer the question. So he's like, hold on, Steven, let me say this before you answer the question. But then he got irritated, and he said next question, and then gave Steven a chance to respond. And I love that Barry got upset at the fact that he didn't get a chance. Like, Barry wasn't punking down.
No, he wasn't backing down either.
Yeah, yeah. But I also heard, and this is the last thing I'll say, I did hear that the Thunder PR team coddles and protects their star players, Westbrook and KD.
Okay.
So they're used to dodging questions like this. They can snap at the media, and they have a history of doing this. So, that's why he's able to kind of do something like this and get away with it, because they're going to take his side.
Okay. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. What about you, B? Do you think he was wrong, or is he being unfairly criticized for it?
No, I don't think he was just wrong. I think he, it's good that he was showing leadership, that he wanted to take over for his teammates and answer for his teammates. I mean, granted, Steven Adams is this grown man. He can answer his own questions himself. So I get it. But I like the leadership that Russell Westbrook showed. Like, we are a team. And another thing too, I think it also showed just frustration. It's the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You could tell Russell Westbrook really wanted to win these games. He's just frustrated. I think some of that stemmed from frustration of, losing the game and them being that close to winning it and everything. So, I think that was one of the main things I got from out of that. I'm like, yeah, Russell Westbrook pissed. He's mad. He's just frustrated that they come in these close to win these games, and they really needed that. That would have really been, kind of a good look for them if they could have tied that series going 2-2 mm-hmm. coming back down here. So I think Russell Westbrook knew they let one get away. And I just think he was just really frustrated. But it was funny how my man was like, no, I asked him a question.
You sound like a little kid, too.
Yeah, I was like, okay, my man not backing down at all. So, yeah, I thought that part was funny. He was just like, yeah, next question. Yeah, like you said, I did hear it sound like they was like taking the microphone. No, I asked him a question. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought I was tickled from that, but. Yeah, man, Russell Westbrook was just frustrated, man. It's all – I guarantee you, if they would have won that game and he probably would have asked him the same as that question, I don't think Russell would have responded the same way, because it's a lot different when you get that W than it is when you're losing.
Oh, of course.
Yo, did you guys see that?
I'm watching this.
Man.
I'm watching this. Russell, for those of you listening, we're watching the game live, so we're trying not to talk about it as much.
Yeah.
But Russell Westbrook is about 2 seconds away from slapping the taste out of Patrick Beverley's mouth.
He really is, dog.
Yep, he is.
He's just waiting for him to take that finger and put it on his shoulder.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, the ref had to step in between him, man. I love it.
But the other thing, B, real quick, I just got to say this. It's not Russell know what happens when he goes on the bench. So it's like, man, why are you asking us this BS, man? We know they suck when I get on the bench.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what, man? I think they both were right. Trammell had every right to ask that question, because it is a fair question. But I think people would have been just as critical or even more critical had Russell Westbrook allowed Steven Adams to answer that. Now, If they asked Steven Adams that question and Russell Westbrook was not in the room, that's different. But you can't ask me about another girl when my girl's standing right next to me. Come on, man. You gotta have a little decorum about yourself or something. So I didn't have a problem. In fact, I laughed when I saw it, because I thought, and I applaud Russell Westbrook and his leadership in doing that, because I think people would have really, really killed him if he would have allowed Steven Adams to answer that question. given the way that the game ended and how they played, so forth and so on. And then, you know, I think his comments about splitting them up, I think that I read that as, you know, really having to deal with what he's dealt with in his years in Oklahoma City with Kevin Durant. You know, a lot of people tried to pit him against Durant. We talked about it in years past when before Durant left that, you know, when people would criticize OKC for their you know, miscomings or shortcomings in the playoffs or what have you, who would always get to blame? Westbrook. Nobody never blamed Kevin Durant. So I think Westbrook, he doesn't want to be a part of it. And I think he probably sat back and he was quiet and he took some of that criticism, unfair criticism at that. And, you know, he's not here for you separating his team, if you will. He wants to make sure that, you know, that they stay together and that they play together. And, you know, if it's going to be an issue, then it's going to be he's going to take it head on. So I didn't have a problem with how he handled it. I thought Trammell asked a fair question. You know, I just think some people in the media have to understand, too, that just because you ask a question doesn't mean that they have to give you an answer. So I'm all here. I'm here for all of that. We talked a little bit earlier about the beef between Markieff Morris from the Washington Wizards and Paul Millsap. Ken, do you like this war of words between these guys?
Oh, man, you know I love it. I love every minute of it, man. And I love that it's playing out on the court. Again, like, this is what the regular season used to be for us.
Yes.
You know, so I'm enjoying it, man. Like, Death Row DC. And they call him that for a reason. So for me, man, you travel. It look like you travel, cuz. For me, I'm here for it, man, because I think it's great. And you know, we don't need this soft basketball, you know, especially not in the playoffs. Like, let's see some intensity, because it's win or go home. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man. I like, and Markieff, he's no punk, you know. So yeah, I love every minute of it, man. I hope it continues.
B, do you think now Markieff Morris, he made those comments after he made the crybaby comment after what was it, Game 3, I think. And, you know, subsequently he has not played well. Do you think that's kind of gotten into his head, or do you think he'll be able to bounce back as they take it back to DC for Game 5?
He'll probably be able to bounce back. I mean, you know, granted, he had to kind of step up defensively against Millsap, but, you know, not saying that Millsap is easy to guard, but, you know, I think he'll get back into the swing of things, being back home, familiar territory, back on home court. I think they'll be fine, man. I mean, I think he'll be fine. He better, because if Paul Millsap work out on him again, put a show on him again, and then they lose. Oh yeah, I think it'd definitely kind of get to him at that point. But he better step it up, man. You better step it up. I love the chippiness, though. I love it.
I do too.
I hope they keep that up.
Yeah, it definitely hasn't worked out in Morris's favor.
No, it has.
No, it has. And I mean, like, if you saw Game 4, Morris was awful. And I mean, Paul Millsap was giving him the business on the other end. Not to mention, the fans were getting on him. And I mean, you know, stuff like that, you know, you never know, can get it. And I don't think that players need any extra type of motivation at this point. Cause I mean, you're in the NBA playoffs, you're playing for all the marbles. So I don't know that you need any more motivation than you already have. I do know that sometimes it's little things that can take people off. And, you know, he could have done something there. So we'll see how it plays out for the rest of the series. But I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the chippiness. I'm enjoying, you know, guys going back and forth at each other. No buddy ball. You know, guys don't like each other. And it's okay not to like each other. I'm totally cool with that. We got some sad news, you know, last week. Obviously, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. Former Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez was acquitted of, what was it? It was a double murder. He was already in prison for life without the possibility of parole for the killing, for the murder of ex-semi-pro football player Odin Lloyd. And we found out that Aaron Hernandez killed himself, hung himself in his jail cell, which sparked a lot of, you know, questions and theories as to why a guy who just beat a double murder case would, you know, hang himself to death. And it sparked a lot of debate, a lot of emotion, a lot of thoughts. B, when you got the news, what did you think about Aaron Hernandez and him dying or killing himself, I should say?
That he possibly did. He was on some Godfather type stuff. I think he did it for his daughters, because I think he was saying reading something to where by his case, you know, by him dying, with his case being canceled, I think the remaining money of his contract goes to his daughter. So if he did that for his daughter, you know, because you know you facing life with the possibility of no parole, I think that can kind of wear down on you emotionally and mentally. So if that's something Aaron Hernandez couldn't handle, I guess he feel like, look, you know, because if he was to serve that time, his daughter wouldn't get none of that money, you know. So by him committing suicide, I think he was on some Godfather type stuff and wanted to kill himself so his daughter can live, you know, or, you know, live a good life, I guess, and still get the remainder of his contract. If that was really his intent of committing suicide. There's been some other stuff going on talking about some he committed suicide because of a lover he had in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting weird. It's getting very weird now. So, you know, I was buying the him committing suicide for his daughter, because I really think him seeing his daughter in the courtroom, I think that kind of broke him. I really do. I really do. I think that kind of took matters to another direction for him, you know, when he saw his daughter and his daughter seeing him that way, and you know, him not being able to see his daughter like that on a regular basis like he used to. I think it did something to him. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, it had to come to that, you know. So, but I just find it interesting how now all this other stuff, him by having a lover and all that stuff, I'm just like, yeah, that's getting weird. It's getting too weird for me, man. I think I need to check out.
There it is. What about you, Ken? Your thoughts on Aaron Hernandez, man?
Yeah, I think the response by the media, by different people, Snoop Dogg got attacked. You know, I thought was interesting. I agree with B. I thought the accusations of him being bisexual was weird. And, you know, I know when I first saw it when I was driving into work, I gasped because I just couldn't believe it. I thought something fishy happened, you know, because it just seemed odd, because I thought that he could have beaten the other case, and I thought they were going to retry the other case. So for him to take his life like that just seemed weird. I think for me, the media's response to it, to be so cold and callous and unforgiving, and almost seemed like they have a sense, almost prideful in doing it too. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. That bothered me.
You know, I I saw, I was much like you guys. I was surprised. I was really surprised, because, and I think the only thing I said really was, I was like, I didn't see that coming, because I didn't. I truly believe, well, I mean, not only was Aaron Hernandez convicted of killing Odin Lloyd, I believe that he killed Odin Lloyd. I think that he killed the other two men as well that he just beat the case for. Is proven that he, you know, in the past shot his homeboy in the face. He didn't die, but he shot him in the face. So I think Aaron Hernandez obviously has demons, and I mean, he's a stone cold killer. Now, how he slipped all of that under the eyes and the idea of the great New England Patriots, which nobody seems to ever talk about, especially when you talk about characters, but that's another story for a totally another day. I felt some compassion for his daughter. In fact, I feel a lot of compassion for his daughter. Having a daughter myself, my daughter is a year older than his daughter. I do feel for her, because, you know, she, I don't know how it was explained to her, like, hey, we're going to see daddy and daddy's in this place. You know, when they would go visit, when she would go visit her father in jail or what have you. And ultimately, she has to live a life without her father. So that's I'm sure that's painful enough. As for my feelings on Aaron Hernandez, I wasn't one of those people who had any conspiracy theories. I honestly didn't care. And I try not to sound callous or speak ill of the deceased. No matter how they're dead, they're dead. But I didn't care. Like I didn't care. And Ken, you touched on a good point. I saw it both ways with the media. I saw some media really going out of their way to slander him and big him. And then I saw some media going out of their way to kind of big him up and to, you know, lay praise to not only just him, but the Patriots. Because the same day that we found out that he took his life was the same day that his former team, and I think 14 of his former teammates, were going to the White House to see your mans. So I just didn't have any emotion about it. I think, you know, it's unfortunate, definitely for his daughter. It offers no bit of closure for Odin Lloyd's family. It offers no bit of closure for the two men who were murdered's family. It's just a sad situation all the way around. Like I said, it's one of my personal feelings on Aaron Hernandez. I don't care. And I'm not going to talk bad about him. I'm not. And I said, we saw the jokes and the memes and stuff. I'm not going to go that far because I think that's a bit much. But I didn't have any feelings one way or the other. You know, that's about all I can say.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, going back to what I was saying, like some people went there, right? They went mm-hmm. the extra mile to slander him and talk bad about him, you know, now that he's dead. And, they probably were saying the same thing about him when he was alive. But it's just like, and I understand, like, for me, like I said, for me, it's a shocker. I didn't have any emotional attachment mm-hmm. to Aaron Hernandez or the case. I didn't even follow the case. I didn't care about any of this stuff. And, you know, for me, I didn't, like, when I saw the news, like I said, it was just shock. But was I sad that he was dead? No. Was I happy that he was dead? No. I was kind of like, you were just right. Like, yeah, just oh, like, damn, you know, the man killed himself. Damn.
Yeah.
But it was just the way people went overboard with how they said didn't care. It was astral.
And, you know, it varied from station to station because I saw a couple of programs on ESPN where they were doing a roundtable thing and they were just almost like praising him. Which I think would be very uncomfortable for some people, particularly, you know, Odin Lloyd's family. And then I saw a couple of other things on Fox and ESPN where they were just going ham. I mean, like everybody was just taking their turns to piss on this man's death. And, you know, you can say, well, look, I don't have any attachment to it and keep it moving like that. But and then, like I said, on social media, obviously, you know, no people don't have filters. So they were just saying whatever. But again, I think I feel for his daughter. I feel for the families of the victims because that offers no closure. There is some legal ramifications in it. There's a possibility that, because he's no longer here, he will no longer be, that conviction won't hold up. So I think he's entitled. I think he may be contractually entitled to some money from the Patriots, a couple of million. Good luck on getting that from the Patriots.
Right.
Of all teams in the NFL, good luck on getting that from those guys. Getting back to basketball before we close out, man, we talked a little bit briefly about the Clippers. Obviously, they're going to be playing without Blake Griffin. So they're, you know, facing, obviously, the rest of this playoffs, whether or not they can get out of this series or, you know, if they advance, they would be facing the Golden State Warriors. A team who they have not fared well against with Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. So it got me to thinking, man, with, you know, Chris Paul's pending free agency, you know, people have been talking about for the longest about blowing this team up. I think the lad B touched on it the last 3 years. There's been either one or two of their major stars have been hurt. As far as Blake Griffin is concerned, I think he's got one more year on his deal. But, you know, there's no guarantees whether or not he will re-sign with L.A. B, do you think we've seen the last of Blake Griffin in a Clipper uniform?
Yep, I think we have. But the real question is, who's going to take him on? Who's going to take on Styrofoam? who's going to be willing to take a chance, which I can see someone like New York Knicks doing. But,
oh, yeah.
Who's going to take
it? Get rid of Melo and get Blake Griffin.
Right. Who's going to really be like, you know what, let's take a chance. Let's spend some money on Blake Griffin. We got the good trainers, the good medical staff that can keep him healthy throughout the season. let's do it. Who's going to take that chance? That's the question. But I think his days at LA Clippers is done. I think you have to break that. You're going to have to break them up after this season, man. Yeah, I think you definitely, especially with this first round exit, you know, from a team of this caliber, you're just going to have to break it up. So yeah, I think Blake Griffin is, I think we saw the last of him in an LA Clippers jersey.
What about you, Ken? Is he done in the City of Angels?
He needs to be, because when they need him, he's never there. And that was the first thing that I saw. I'm like, dang, man, Chris Paul gonna go out again and won't have his guys to at least lose in a fair fight.
And not to cut you off, realistically, did we, and of course this series is still going on, but did we expect them to get out of the first round? And if we did expect them to get out of the first round, did you expect them to get past Golden State? So I guess what I'm saying is, like, we knew this is going to come to an end at some point, right?
Yes, but it gives them an excuse.
Okay, I got you.
And for the last couple of years, that's what we've had with them. We don't know what they could have done if healthy. Because JJ's been hurt. Chris Paul got hurt. Blake got hurt. Like, they really, it really seems like they're cursed.
Donald Sterling. You know, Donald Sterling curse.
Yeah. Either he will be there and Chris Paul is gone, or Chris Paul is there and Blake Griffin is gone. One or the other is going to happen.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. yeah, I agree, man. This might be it, man. This really might be it. And it's unfortunate, because this team had so much promise, you know, with Lob City and everything since Chris Paul has gotten there. And for those of you listening, I've watched basketball, you know, practically all my life since 1980. And the Clippers have always been bad. So, you know, the couple of years where they had a glimmer of hope of really, really being good and, you know, possibly contending for a title, you know, their stars get hurt. I agree with Ken Ambi. I think this is it for, I mean, obviously we don't know how this series is going to play out. But yeah, I think this is it. And it's really coming to an end for them. And as I'm speaking, we are seeing the conclusion of the series between the Rockets and Oklahoma City Thunder. It looks like Oklahoma City is going to jump on the boat and they're about to go fishing. And this series will be closed out by the Houston Rockets. So that one's, so Houston will be moving on, getting ready for the next round. It's time, it's the end of the podcast, so it's time for our final thoughts. B is first up. B, what's your final thoughts?
This Saturday, I am looking forward to checking out Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko. They're going to be fighting in the heavyweight division, if you're not a fan of boxing, if you don't know. Both heavyweights, Anthony Joshua is 18-0 with 18 knockouts. He's an up-and-coming young heavyweight. He's very exciting to watch, and I hope him and the Bronx Bomber meet in the heavyweight match in the near future. So, I'm just looking forward to seeing, and it's not on pay-per-view. It's just going to be on HBO.
Okay.
HBO Boxing. I think it's HBO Boxing or Showtime Boxing. I think it's Showtime. It's one of them two. Showtime Boxing, HBO Boxing, Klitschko, Anthony Joshua. If you looking for a good boxing match, something exciting with possibility of a knockout that's going to happen, I suggest you guys check it out. So I know I am. So there you go.
There it is. What about you, Kent?
Jason Whitlock.
Oh, Lord.
He defended the comments by that guy Natal or whatever his name is, that said the racist thing about Serena Williams.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? I didn't even know that.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Wow, dog.
In a nutshell, what he was saying is that we need to stop being so sensitive.
Mm.
We get upset about every little thing. Look at here, dog. Like, she's having a child. She's a mother. She's a parent. And it don't matter what you say about anybody's kid that's white or black or whatever, you say something mean spirit about somebody's kid, oh, you're going to hear from it, because they're always sensitive. Dads are sensitive. Mm-hmm. Moms are sensitive. So, but not only was this insensitive in what he said, it was racist. And Whitlock, just because he is who he is, does not excuse him from saying racist stuff. Yeah, he said, Colin said he said called somebody Hitler or said something about that to somebody. Yeah, that was insensitive too. He should be called out on that too. I don't care if it's a private conversation that was made public. The fact of the matter is, he said some racist stuff and it needs to be called out. It doesn't excuse him from being responsible for the things that he said, mm-hmm. for offending a child that's not even here for the sake of a joke. And Whitlock, you want to say that we're being sensitive? N-word, please.
Oh man, it's classic. Just to piggyback off you, Cam, man, Serena Williams, man. Serena freaking Williams. Just when let me start by saying, man, I love black women. I love women, but I love black women. There's nothing that a black woman cannot do. When we got the news that Serena Williams was pregnant, you do the math, and I think she posted a picture on Instagram that she was 20 weeks pregnant. So you do the math and you realize that she played the Australian Open and won the major while pregnant. Man, that is amazing to me. I mean, like, no, I've never been pregnant, at least not that I can tell. But my wife has been pregnant, and and my wife has been pregnant four times. And I asked, well, baby, do you think you could have, you think you could have done something, physical activity? She was like, oh yeah, when you're pregnant, she's like, your first, it's your first trimester. You got your energy and da 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 da. And she said it so carefree-ish. And I started thinking back to, when we were pregnant with our second son, and she was having morning sickness. She was throwing up all the time, and I was just disgusted by the whole stuff, and I couldn't bring food that smelled in the house. And I'm like, how is this possible? This is supposed to be fun when you're pregnant. But I watched the amazing birth of all of our children, and I was just amazed. And I'm just like, Serena freaking Williams won a major while pregnant. There's no excuse, man. I mean, like, I get a Charlie horse and I don't want to go to work. Serena Williams was pregnant and won a major. Man, it's amazing, man. Like I said, I wish the best to Serena and her fiance and the baby that will be coming here this fall. I hope she has a safe pregnancy, man. All I got to say is, man, don't sleep on black girl magic. Don't sleep on it. ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us, man. For Ken, for B, for FIFO in his absence. Happy birthday, player. We will catch you guys next week. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. We'll catch you next week. Peace.
Peace.
Chill.